A sloth, a donkey, and a curious human. Send a prompt and see what they're doing. One hits a record with a question on his mind. Two brothers pick it up, see what they find. Corn takes his time, Herman's got the facts. Back and forth, they never hold back. My weird prompts, come on in, that's where we begin. My weird prompts, glad you're here.
This episode was generated using artificial intelligence. Please verify facts.
Daniel sent us this one from the middle of a move. He and Hannah are hauling Euroboxes, the 60 by 40 kind, and he's noticing something that doesn't get talked about enough. You load these things up, they're structural marvels, and suddenly you've got 200 kilos of books and stone samples in the back of a Seat Ibiza, engineered for two people in a weekend bag. The suspension looks fine, the tires look fine, but is it actually fine? He's asking three things. How do you find your car's actual weight rating? Does leaving a sustained heavy load in the trunk matter, even if you're under the limit? And where in the 300-page manual do they bury the numbers that actually keep you alive?
It's moving season. June, July, everyone's hauling boxes, swapping rental cars. This is exactly when overloading incidents spike. The NHTSA estimates that underinflated tires alone contribute to roughly 11,000 crashes a year in the U.S., and a big chunk of those happen when people load up for moves and never adjust their tire pressure. It's invisible until it isn't.
The invisible part is what gets me. You stand behind the car. It's not sagging dramatically. The tires aren't bulging in some cartoonish way. So your brain tells you it's fine. But the numbers don't care. A tire rated for 475 kilos at 36 psi drops to about 410 kilos at 32 psi. That's not a gradual decline. It's a curve that gets steeper the lower you go. You could be over the tire's actual load capacity, while the car still looks perfectly level in the driveway.
The Eurobox is part of what makes this deceptive. These boxes are rated to hold up to about 50 kilos before the plastic risks failing. 50 kilos in a box that size, that's books, tile samples, the kind of weight architects carry around. Four of those in the trunk and you're at 200 kilos before you've even thought about passengers or fuel.
Daniel mentioned Hannah's an architect, and she stores heavy supplies in the trunk regularly. Stone samples, catalogs, tools. That's the scenario that doesn't get covered in the manual. Not a one-time move where you unload at the end of the day, but a sustained load that lives in the car week after week. Daniel's instinct is that it feels wrong, even if the total weight is technically under the limit. He's not wrong to wonder about that.
He's really not. Most drivers have never once looked up their car's payload rating. They know the fuel economy number, they might know the horsepower, but the GVWR, the curb weight, the gross axle weight rating? These are the numbers that determine whether your car stops in time when someone cuts you off on the highway with 200 kilos in the back.
GVWR, gross vehicle weight rating. That's the maximum the car is designed to weigh fully loaded. Curb weight is what it weighs empty, with a full tank. Subtract one from the other and you get your payload. For a Seat Ibiza, we're talking roughly 1,650 kilos, GVWR, about 1,100 kilos curb weight, which leaves around 550 kilos of payload. That sounds generous until you do the math.
Two adults at roughly 150 kilos combined, 40 kilos of fuel, and four loaded Euroboxes at 200 kilos. That's 390 kilos. You're under the limit, but not by as much as you'd think. And that's assuming the load is distributed properly and the tires are at the right pressure. If you've got the tires at the eco-pressure setting, 32 psi, and you're near the payload limit, you're creating conditions tire engineers specifically warn against.
The eco-pressure thing is a trap. Automakers push lower pressures for fuel economy and ride comfort, and that's fine for commuting. But the door jam sticker, not the manual, the actual sticker on the driver's door frame, lists a higher pressure for maximum load on a compact car that's often 36 to 44 psi. Most people never inflate to that number because they don't know it exists.
Daniel raised this as a technical writer. He said the deficit of car manuals is that they give you every detail possible for regulatory reasons, and the crucial stuff ends up in a footnote. He's exactly right. The door jam sticker is the more authoritative source because it reflects the specific configuration of that individual vehicle. The engine, the options, the wheel size. The manual gives you a range across all configurations. If you want to know what your actual car can handle, you look at the sticker.
Which is not where anyone looks. You open the glove box, pull out this 300-page tome, flip to the index, try to remember whether it's under weights, or payload, or technical specifications. Meanwhile, the sticker is right there on the doorframe where you see it every time you get in, and you've never once read it.
I want to flag something about sustained trunk loads, because this is where Daniel's intuition is pointing. If you're under the weight limit, is it actually a problem to leave heavy stuff in the trunk for weeks or months? Suspension sag from sustained load takes years, not weeks. But three things happen faster than people expect. First, tire flat spotting. A heavy car sitting in one position for days can develop flat spots that cause vibration at highway speeds. Sometimes those never round out and you're buying new tires.
Second, and this one surprised me, is the spare tire well. When the car sits lower because of a sustained load, the angle of the trunk seals changes. Water that would normally drain away can pool and find its way into the spare tire well. You open it up 6 months later, and there's a puddle, and your spare is rusting. That's not theoretical.
Third is heat, and this is especially relevant in Jerusalem. Trunk temperatures in a Jerusalem summer hit 60 to 70 degrees Celsius. That accelerates tire rubber degradation. It can soften the plastic of the Euroboxes themselves and cause them to deform under load, and it puts extra thermal stress on anything rubber or adhesive in the rear of the car. So even if you're 50 kilos under the payload limit, you're combining weight with sustained heat exposure in a way the manual never accounts for.
The manual treats weight as a static number. You're either over or under. It doesn't model the combination of weight, plus time, plus temperature, plus road conditions. That's where the technical writer in me gets annoyed. The information is complete, it's technically accurate, but it's not findable, and it's not contextualized. There's no section that says, if you're an architect storing stone samples in Jerusalem in August, here's what you need to know.
The regulatory gap is interesting here. Since 2020, the EU has required visible payload stickers on vans. Right on the body, you can't miss it. But passenger cars are exempt. So the vehicle most likely to be overloaded by someone moving apartments has no visible weight rating anywhere on the exterior. You have to go hunting for it.
Which brings us back to Daniel's core question. He doesn't drive regularly. He doesn't know the correct tire pressure for his own vehicle. And he's about to load it up with Euroboxes full of heavy stuff. Where do you even start?
Let's anchor this in the numbers. The Eurobox, 60 by 40 centimeters, the standard stacking box that's become the universal language of moving, is a quiet engineering achievement. The walls are ribbed to distribute load down to the base, the lid interlocks, and the whole thing can take about 50 kilos before the plastic risks cracking. That's not a box of throw pillows. That's architecture textbooks, marble samples, a stand mixer, plus every cast iron pan you own.
The box doesn't care. It'll sit there looking exactly the same at 5 kilos as it does at 45. That's the deception. The container gives you no feedback. The car is the thing absorbing all the decisions you made in the apartment.
The car's limit is expressed in three numbers most drivers have never been taught. GVWR, maximum. The vehicle can weigh fully loaded. Curb weight, what it weighs empty with a full tank. Payload capacity, GVWR minus curb weight. That's your budget, passengers, cargo, the dog, the aftermarket roof rack, everything.
The math is unforgiving. A seat Ibiza, GVWR around 1,650 kilos, curb weight around 1,100, payload roughly 550. Two adults is already 150 kilos, a full tank of fuel is 40, and suddenly your cargo budget is 360 kilos. Seven Euroboxes at 50 kilos each, and you're done. And you haven't even accounted for the fact that weight isn't perfectly distributed across both axles.
That's the part that trips people up. The vehicle has two separate ratings, front and rear gross axle weight ratings, and they're not equal. The front axle is typically rated lower because it's already carrying the engine and transmission. On a front engine compact, the front axle might carry 60% of the curb weight before you even open the door. So when you load the trunk, you're actually adding weight to the axle that has more headroom.
Which is counterintuitive. People think putting heavy stuff in the back seat is safer because it's inside the cabin. But from a load distribution standpoint, the trunk is better. It puts weight directly over the rear axle where the suspension is designed to take it. The back seat puts weight between the axles, raising the center of gravity and changing handling in ways that are harder to predict.
Here's where the stakes get real. Braking distance increases. A car at maximum payload can take 10 to 15% longer to stop from highway speeds. The tires carry more weight than designed for at a given pressure, meaning more sidewall flex, more heat buildup, and a higher probability of a blowout. Especially in summer, especially on a long drive, especially if you never adjusted the pressure from the eco setting.
Suspension geometry shifts too. The rear suspension compresses, changing the camber angle of the rear wheels. That affects how much tire tread is actually in contact with the road. You can be under the payload limit on paper, and still have reduced grip because the tires aren't sitting flat anymore. The car will feel vague in corners, and you won't know why.
The car gives you almost no warning. That's what makes this differ from overloading the shelf. The shelf groans, it bows, you can see the failure coming. A car at its payload limit looks basically identical to a car at half its payload limit. The suspension compresses maybe an inch. The feedback system is almost non-existent until you're mid-corner and the back end feels looser than it should. Let's talk about the Ford Fiesta case, because it's the cleanest illustration of how tire pressure and payload interact invisibly. A listener loaded 300 kilos of ceramic tiles in the back, 6 Euroboxes at full capacity. Tires were at 32 PSI, the standard eco-commuting pressure. On a highway off-ramp, the rear tire sidewall failed. Not a puncture, the sidewall itself gave out.
The post-mortem is instructive. The tire was rated for 475 kilos at 36 PSI. At 32 PSI, that load capacity drops to about 410 kilos per tire. The rear axle was carrying roughly 480 kilos. Each rear tire was being asked to handle 240 kilos, under the rated max at full pressure, but over the actual capacity at the pressure the tires were at.
The tire load index is the number on the sidewall that almost nobody knows how to read. It's usually a two-digit code. 88, 91, 94, mapping to a specific maximum weight at maximum rated pressure. And 88 means 560 kilos per tire at max pressure. Drop the pressure and you're not at 560 anymore. The relationship isn't linear, but the NHTSA standard is clear. The load rating is only valid at the pressure stamped on the sidewall.
The Fiesta driver wasn't doing anything that looked reckless. The car wasn't visibly sagging. But the math was off by about 70 kilos per tire, and the failure mode was catastrophic at highway speed. That's the gap between looks fine and is fine.
Now let's bring this back to the Ibiza. Daniel's car has a GVWR around 1,650 kilos and a curb weight around 1,100. Payload of roughly 550 kilos. Two adults at 150 kilos, 40 kilos of fuel, and four loaded Euroboxes at 200 kilos puts you at 390. You're under the limit, but only if the tires are at the higher pressure on the door jamb sticker, which on a compact car is typically 36 to 44 PSI for a full load. If you're still running the 32 PSI eco setting, your actual tire capacity is lower than what the payload math assumes.
That's the part the manual doesn't connect. The payload number in the technical specifications assumes the tires are at the recommended pressure for that load condition. But the manual buries the load adjusted pressure in a separate section, if it mentions it at all. So you get someone diligent enough to look up the payload, does the math, concludes they're fine, and never realizes the tire pressure is the missing variable that makes the whole equation work.
Now, the sustained load question. Daniel asked whether leaving 50-plus kilos in the trunk for weeks matters if you're under the weight limit. We covered the three faster-acting problems, tire flat spotting from sitting under load in summer heat, which can cause permanent vibration, the spare tire well condensation issue where a compressed rear suspension changes drainage angles and water pools against the seals, and heat compounding, trunk temperatures at 60 to 70 degrees Celsius degrading tire rubber, softening Eurobox plastic, and forcing rear shocks to work against a preload they weren't designed to manage constantly.
You're under the payload limit, the car looks fine, and you're still accumulating damage that won't show up until months later. A vibration at highway speed you can't diagnose. A spare tire rusted to the well. Rear shocks needing replacement at 60,000 kilometers instead of 100,000. The manual doesn't warn you about any of this because it treats weight as a binary. Under or over. It doesn't model sustained load plus heat plus time.
This is where Daniel's frustration as a technical writer lands perfectly. He called the manual a 300-page tome where the crucial details end up in a footnote. I pulled a few owner's manuals for common compact cars. The payload information is almost always in a table under technical data or weights, buried around page 280. And there's often a footnote, optional equipment may reduce payload, which is accurate, but it doesn't tell you by how much, and it doesn't tell you where to find the number for your specific car.
The sunroof you didn't order, the upgraded sound system, the tow package, each eats into that 550-kilo number. But the manual gives you a range across all configurations, not the number for the car you're actually driving. As a technical writer, that's the difference between information that's complete and information that's findable. Complete means every fact is in there somewhere. Findable means the person who needs it can get to it in 30 seconds.
The door jamb sticker is the findable version. It's right there on the driver's side door frame. You see it every time you get in, and you've trained yourself to ignore it. It lists GVWR and Gower front and rear, and the tire pressure for both normal and maximum load. That sticker reflects the specific configuration of that individual vehicle. It's the authoritative source, and it's more accessible than anything in the glove box.
Step 1. Before you load a single Eurobox, open the driver's door. Look at the sticker. Write down the GVWR. That's your ceiling. Then find your curb weight, usually in the manual or online. That's your payload budget. Write it on a sticky note. Put it on the dashboard. You now know more than 95% of drivers on the road.
Step 2. Tire pressure. The door jamb sticker lists two pressures, one for normal load, one for maximum load. When you're hauling heavy, inflate to the higher number. On a compact car that's typically 36 to 44 psi, not the 32 you run for commuting. After you unload, bleed them back down. It's 5 minutes at a petrol station air pump, and it's the difference between a tire operating within its rated capacity and one that isn't.
Step 3. If you're leaving a sustained load in the trunk, stone samples, tools, whatever, check the spare tire well once a month for condensation. Just lift the trunk floor and look. If there's moisture, dry it out and consider a rubber trunk liner. And rotate the cargo position every few weeks. Even sliding a heavy bulk 6 inches left or right changes the pressure point on the tires and reduces flat spotting risk.
Step 4. If you're doing this regularly, spend $30 to $50 on an aftermarket tire pressure monitoring system, the kind that screws onto the valve stems and gives you a little display for the dashboard. Real-time pressure and temperature per tire. It'll catch a slow leak or a heat buildup before you feel it in the steering wheel. For the cost of about one replacement tire, you get continuous awareness of the thing most likely to fail.
None of these steps requires a mechanic. None takes more than 10 minutes. And together they close the gap between what the manual assumes you know and what most drivers actually know, which, right now, is almost nothing about the weight their car is carrying.
Those 4 steps will keep you safe on your next move, but there's a bigger question sitting behind all of this. Vans in the EU have been required to display payload capacity on a visible exterior sticker since 2020. You walk up to a Transit or a Sprinter, and the number is right there on the bodywork. But passenger cars, the things people actually use to move apartments, are exempt. There's no regulatory requirement to put the GVWR anywhere. A driver can see it without opening a door and decoding a sticker they've trained themselves to ignore.
The case for requiring it is pretty straightforward. The NHTSA's own data shows underinflated tires contribute to roughly 11,000 crashes annually, and a significant share happen during moves or heavy hauls when people never adjust their pressure. A visible payload sticker wouldn't fix all of that, but it would surface the number at exactly the moment someone's about to load up. You're standing at the open trunk with a Eurobox in your hands. If the limit is printed right there on the hatch frame, you see it. You can't unsee it.
The counterargument is that payload varies by configuration, and a sticker might confuse someone whose specific options differ from the base spec. But the door jamb sticker already solves that. It's configuration specific. The regulatory gap isn't a technical problem, it's a lobbying problem. Automakers don't want a number on the outside of the car that might make it look less capable than the competitor's model parked next to it.
That's going to collide with the EV transition in a way nobody's really talking about. A VW ID.3, the electric equivalent of a Golf, has a payload of only about 400 kilos. That's less than the Ibiza. The battery pack adds 300 to 500 kilos to curb weight, and the GVWR doesn't rise by the same amount because the suspension and chassis are shared with the petrol version. So the payload shrinks by almost exactly the weight of the battery. People are going to load up their electric hatchbacks the same way they did with their old Golf, and they're going to be over the limit before they've even added the second passenger.
Which makes the sticker argument stronger, not weaker. If payload is shrinking across the entire market and nobody's advertising that fact, the gap between what drivers assume and what the car can actually handle is widening. A visible payload rating isn't just a convenience, it's a safety disclosure that becomes more urgent as the numbers get tighter.
Here's the thought I want to leave people with. Your car can almost certainly handle more than you think. The engineering margins are real, and most compact cars are capable of carrying a surprising amount if you respect the numbers. But you have to know the numbers. They're in the manual, they're on the door jamb, they're in the online databases. The information is complete. It's just not findable, and the gap between complete and findable is where the blowouts happen.
Now, Hilbert's daily fun fact.
In 1785, a succession crisis erupted in the Sultanate of Bagirmi, in what is now Chad, when the dying sultan named his favorite camel as his heir. A move that triggered a three-way war between the sultan's brother, his eldest son, and a faction of courtiers who insisted the camel's coronation must proceed exactly as decreed.
Right.
That's a lot to sit with.
This has been my Weird Prompts. If you enjoyed this episode, leave us a review wherever you get your podcasts. It genuinely helps people find the show. You can also email us at show@myweirdprompts.com. Thanks to our producer, Hilbert Flumingtop. I'm Herman Poppleberry.
I'm Corn. Know your numbers, check your spare tire well, and maybe don't name a camel as your heir.
Good advice all around.
This episode's script was written by DeepSeek V4 Pro, with text-to-speech by Chatterbox.
Thanks for listening to our show, My Weird Prompts, where odd thoughts go. From sloth's slow takes to facts on cue, we chase the strange and follow through. Some nights it's news, some nights it's lore, a thought you've never heard before. The host dig in, the host dig deep. The stranger the prompt, the less they sleep. From tiny questions, big ones too. From half-formed hunches to deja vu. If something odd is in your head, send it in, we'll chase the thread. My Weird Prompts, that's the close. From sloth, from man, from long-eared host. My Weird Prompts, until next time, stay curious, keep weird in mind.